You're listening to The Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. It's a Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Happy New Year, Sue.
You nearly forgot your name then.
I nearly forgot my own name.
That was ridiculous. Quite ridiculous.
That's just how my new year rolled.
No, it's because you're excited.
I am excited. There's so much happening in this studio today.
Well, it's packed. It's actually, there's stuff everywhere I've never seen. I mean, we often
and
get
the smells
quite a lot of food,
and, yeah.
but I've never seen it so packed. I'm not even going to, you know, we normally have a chat to start with. No,
we're not doing that.
No, we're not doing that.
We're going
straight in it.
We've got our forks at the ready and we're going to dive in.
Yeah. So I'm joined by Sunny of Family Secret. We're also going to talk to Philip Owens later of Flavour Feed. That's really, really interesting as well. And we might have time to just cut into Adrian Boswell from Selfridges, who's a Selfridges buyer. But there again, we may not. Depends on how much we eat. And if not, we'll use our Adrian interview next week.
Right.
So very, very quickly, Family Secret have developed a number of worldwide cooking sauces designed to be tasty, natural, without all the usual nasty stuff. They've got sauces like Punjabi Tadka and Rogan Josh. Normal story, you would think, Paul. Family recipes so good that somebody actually decides to start making them and market them to other people. Sonny followed this trail. He was really successful. Family products started being sold in Tesco's and Asda. But no, that wasn't enough. He went on travelling across Asia with his wife. And that's when he realised suddenly that there were so many other flavours out there that he wanted to develop. Stuff from, we've got Indonesia here, we've got Moroccan tangine, we've got stuff from Thailand, are we on Facebook, Harry? We're on Periscope on Twitter. If you want to go Periscope on Twitter, you can see all these amazing bits of packaging. More importantly, you'll be able to see some of the food in a minute. So, cutting to the quick, there's some great interactive videos that Sunny's developed on YouTube, and if you go onto the foodtalk.co.uk website, we can give you links to those. So first of all, it's really nice to see you, Sunny. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've only met you for 20 minutes. You're one of my favourite people in the whole world.
You probably say that to everyone.
No, I don't. Certainly don't say that to Paul Andrews. So in front of us, we've got all these amazing things. Just quickly tell us, because I know Paul's dying to tuck into some of the curries
you've
cooked.
You're right.
Just tell us about this range that you've got here, because it's quite an eclectic range from around the world.
Yeah. So, as mentioned before, it's Indian sauces is how we started. I'm Indian, so that's what I knew best. And that's what was passed on from, from like my mom and, passed on from, generations. And that's kind of where the Family Secret came from. Like you said, it was, traveling around the world. And I just thought there's so much more out there that, that the UK wants to, have really and taste. And I put them all together and thought, well, let's bring them back to the UK. And yeah.
Okay. Because Paul is salivating.
I am.
You're so lovely. He's brought these tiny little Tupperware dishes that are like the size of, I don't know, what are they? About the size of my hand, tiny sort of ones, about 3 inches square or something.
Bite size.
So, and one's got chickpea Indonesian rendang.
No, one's got the chickpea curry.
Got that wrong. Yeah. And the other one is
the chicken Indonesian rendang. Yeah.
Okay, so I've prepared these for you, Paul. And
have you?
Sonny's recommended that you have a little bit of extra coriander in there and extra chili. He said to me, "Oh, don't put that much chili in." And I went, "No, don't worry. We know about Paul."
Right, so what have I got first? I've got the chicken pandang first, have I? That's chickpeas.
The Indonesian rendang.
Okay.
So Paul's tucking into that now. Sonny's also thoughtfully put some rice with it. I mean, he's such a nice man.
Thank you, Sue.
And the whole point of this, Paul, is if you go on the website, you don't speak with your mouthful. If you go on the website, literally these packets are literally cooking sauces. So some nice person's done all the lovely blendings, got all the sauces for you. You need to chop up and add things like rice noodles or you know, vegetables or any of that stuff or meat, fish, whatever. And if anybody's been on BuzzFeed and seen their sort of recipe things that they do, it's very much like that, isn't it, Sonny? It's just quick, a camera sort of, you know, video cam from the top.
Yeah, that's
and just
right.
showing you really easily. I mean, you've just shown me one of those. Literally, you could cook this in 5 minutes.
Yeah, literally. And we're going to, you know, that's going to become synonymous to, you know, to the brand. We're going to make sure that, you know, we're not just a cooking source. We want to make sure that people are actually, you know, getting creative, and we want to help people get creative with, you know, with these cooking sauces. You know, at first look, it just looks like, oh, another cooking sauce, and you can, you know, curry and rices, but there's so much more that you can do with them. And that's what we're trying to put out there,
Paul,
you know, through these
say,
little videos.
I'm really sorry to interrupt, Sonny.
Sorry, Sue.
Paul, you're not supposed to eat all of them. You're supposed to taste. So can you put that one down?
I finished it. I'm sorry.
Can you taste the next one?
Well, that's a good sign.
Because the thing is, they don't taste like cooking sauces, do they? They
I like it.
But don't you think they're lovely, though? Fresh.
I don't know. It's all gone.
Taste the other one, and I think that's really good. Now, while he's doing that, you've particularly bought something which is keema. So keema in Indian means mint.
Yeah, really. Mint. Yeah.
Really. And I've had keema, goats and beef and all sorts of stuff. But you've got beef keema.
Lamb.
It's lamb keema. Lamb keema. So there's minced lamb, and you've chopped up some small chilies for us, and you've chopped up some coriander. Mm-hmm. And very, very important for this particular dish, because I've had it in really nice restaurants, some very, very finely chopped either red onion or white onion, you know, slightly sweeter onion to go with it. So those are our sort of ingredients. We've then got a brioche roll. And for anybody who doesn't really know about brioche, brioche is a slightly sweeter roll, isn't it? It's quite buttery, I would say.
Tell us what
you've done for us. And then we've got Lucy, our producer here, who is over the moon not to be standing at the back, but actually getting involved.
Because
you're so excited. So you're going to prepare this for Lucy and show how to do it. And then we're going to, when Paul's still eating, we'll pass one over to Paul when he's finished.
I'm just halfway through the chickpea one, and I love chickpeas. And I have to say, I really, really, really like the Indonesian chicken. And I even like the chickpea even better. So just talk amongst yourselves while I just finish these, and then we'll go on to the next one.
Sure.
Okay, so over to you, Sonny.
Yeah, so I do have to apologise before we begin, because this was meant to be brioche buns, but I couldn't get hold of those today, so apologies for that. But it's you know, it's the same thing, but just a different shape. So shall I...
Yes, you go for it. I'll describe what you're doing. Sure. So essentially, if you go to restaurants, let's say something like Gymkhana, which is one of my favourite restaurants in Mayfair, which is a great Indian restaurant, which I think has just got a Michelin star, actually. Mm-hmm. They serve this up as one of the signature dishes. They use a brioche bun. They use goat keema, but lamb keema is very, very tasty, or minced keema. And they're doing exactly what Sonny's doing now. So they'll present it to you on a plate. You've then got the brioche bun. You put the keema inside, nice, hot, piping hot keema. Then you add your own... which is what Sonny's just doing now. You add some, it's his raw onion, chopped very, very finely on the top. So he's just doing that for Lucy now. He's now adding some chilies. Lucy's not bad on the old chili, Sonny, so don't hold back on that. And of course, my favourite, lots and lots of fresh coriander. Often the brioche bun is toasted, isn't it, Sonny, I think?
Yeah, that's right.
Toasted. I mean,
we didn't have
and in any. A way, it's like a sort of hamburger in a way, sort of Indian hamburger, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's a Bombay street food, really. It's
right.
It's actually called keema po. So that's it. It's really simple, straightforward.
Right then, and Lucy, cut it in half and tell us what you think.
And is it normally served in a brioche type bun?
Slightly sweet, I think.
Yeah,
you know, Indians love
a bun.
A bun of some kind.
Yeah. Indians do love a little bit of sweetness, don't they?
They do.
They love the sweets.
Either or, Lucy. I mean, you could grab it whole, or you could have it half.
Bearing in mind,
don't mess about with bits of it, Lucy. No. Get the whole thing in your cake hole.
Yeah. But it's a really nice little. I mean, if you had people round for dinner, or even if you were outside and you didn't have a barbecue, it's a good one to do, isn't it? You do keema in the pan using your sauce, mm-hmm. and pretty easy to dish up for everybody.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, you could cook up like small, you know, mini sliders is always good. Mm. And, you know, get creative with a bit of chicken tikka, I guess, in another one. So yep. You could have like an arrangement of different, sliders.
Look at her face. Can I just say to anybody that's listening, you won't know this, but Lucy is pregnant. Are you 3 or 4 months?
Five months
mm. pregnant. And baby liking that?
Baby's loving that.
As well as
I'm
Lucy.
Very happy. Lucy's really very happy.
You know what's going to happen, though, don't you?
Baby's going to be addicted to Indian food.
But at 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning, probably. She's going to turn to her partner and go, do you know what I need to eat now? Yeah. It's a keema bun, and I need one now.
It'll be one of your cravings, won't it? Mm.
Definitely.
What's the taste like?
Chili is already a favourite of mine.
Is it?
It's fresh. Really, you can taste the sort of curry from the keema and everything, but it's just really fresh and almost colourful tasting, I would say.
So lots of nice spices.
Mm. The red onions really, really work with it, I think, as well as the coriander. Mm. I put coriander in.
I think the thing with onions as well is you get that, it's a good, because keema is quite soft, having a sort of bit of crunch with it is a good sort of match, isn't it?
Yeah, no, you know, definitely. I mean, what we're trying to do with, you know, with our sauces is, you know, the authenticity. You know, for instance, like the green Thai, is very runny in its consistency, and that's how you would generally get it in.
Quite thin,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, very
not oily, but thin.
Yeah, thin in consistency, and that's how you would get it in, you know, in like in Thailand and loads of.
Oh, I'm liking that.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Have you not had that before?
No, I haven't.
It's really nice, isn't it? Mm. Is it actually it's got a name? You just said it was keema.
Keema pow, they call it.
Pow.
Pow. Yeah.
Pow being Indian word for bread.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
I don't entirely
know. Yeah.
Well, that's what it is in Portuguese. I'm guessing.
I guess that's what it is. Yeah.
Good. Well, now everybody's got their mouth full, so I'm going to have to talk because nobody's.
Oh, what a shame.
So there's loads more.
There is loads more, yes. So can I just go back to Family Secret? So you went round trying to get recipes by travelling. Mm-hmm. Just tell us a little bit about the places that you went to.
Yeah, so, you know, as the sources describe, I mean, it was a little bit of a, you know, a honeymoon expedition. I had actually, you know, proposed to the wife. She happily said yes, thank God. And, so we thought, you know, well, let's go away to Bali, etc. And as we were in these places, I was secretly doing a little bit of, you know, kind of, you know, talking to people and, you know, doing a little bit of searching and, you know, the conversation always came around, you know, to food.
It's something that really brings people together, isn't it? No matter what the nationality.
Exactly. Mm. So, you know, someone's always got a secret recipe from somewhere. And, you know, because I'm so passionate about food, there was always a food conversation from somewhere. And whilst these people, you know, were talking about food, I was carefully writing these things down, yeah.
Lucy's helping herself to another keema bun.
I'm actually making Sue one.
Are you?
Thank you.
I tell you what, that was superb.
Was it good?
Yeah, good. It was. Yeah.
And do you feel that people are a little bit shy about giving recipes away? Because some of them are sort of like family secrets. So what do you sort of trying to persuade them and, you know, what were you...
Yeah, so
what were your tactics?
You know, everyone has, you know, someone always has some type of secret recipe. If it's like, oh, this is nice, and it's, well, you know, can you tell me, you know how to make it? No, it's a, you know, it's a secret recipe. It's handed down from so-so. So there, you know, there is always a go on, you know, what's in it? You know, what's the secret recipe? And you know, they eventually, you know, give up to my charm. So
it's really funny you saying that, Sonny. I a while back, I used to make this. Lamb tagine dish, and my youngest son, who's a very good cook, came home one day, and I said, "Oh, would you like one of my lamb tagine specials?" And he went, "Yeah." So I cooked it, and he went, "That's really nice. What's the recipe?" And I said, "It's in the recipe. I got it from a Moroccan cookbook." And I gave him the book, and he said, "There's nothing in this that's actually in the recipe." And what I'd been adapting it over time without really realizing it until I ended up with a recipe that wasn't remotely what the original recipe was. They're nice, aren't they?
Oh my goodness, that's wow.
Awesome.
I forgot actually the softness of the roll is really good as well. Actually, it really helps.
It really works.
The other thing is, I'm not a great fan of burgers actually, but the thing with a burger is it's actually quite difficult to eat because this is minced. It's so much easier to eat, isn't it? Mm. Oh, the taste of it is lovely. The spices are really nice, Sunny. Good balance there, aren't they?
To my mind, that's the ultimate street food.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I would have to eat four or five of those if I was in the street. Because they're really Moorish. they're actually very light as well, aren't they?
They are. Yeah.
And it's got that juxtaposition of the sweetness of the bun and the tartness of the minced lamb, is it?
Yeah, minced lamb, yeah.
Sonny, I'm so glad you've come today. I'm so glad. So let's get back to the travelling thing.
Sure.
Is there any particular countries that you really, really enjoyed their food in quite an unexpected way?
I think Indonesia for me was was amazing. I mean, the food there, the people, just the country. Bali is just fantastic, and there is a whole mix of people there as well, and a whole mix of different types of food from Thailand.
It's the
Malaysia.
Ultimate fusion, isn't it? Because it's in that part of Asia where lots of different parts of Asia collide, as it were.
Yeah.
So you've got this fusion of food. I spent time in Singapore, which is fairly similar.
Like, yeah. Turkey's like that as well, in that sort of east-west Europe,
Sort of clash. Yeah, so I loved loved Bali. Didn't really know much about Indonesia.
He's name-dropping now, Sue.
And hence why I had to get my hands on an Indonesian redang sauce.
And is there particular spices that really stand out for you as well on your travels that are really distinctive?
I mean, coming from an Indian background, I'm quite I know these spices quite well. So it's all the chilies, the ginger, the galangal, and things like that. Well, galangal is
sort of like a ginger.
Of like a ginger. So it's just how they're put together really is is interesting.
Just learning that.
And that was fantastic. Yeah.
And do you think there's any Western influences that have filtered through to some of these? And is that a good thing? Because sometimes I worry. You know, that some places get westernised, and then I think the food somehow gets diluted or ruined sometimes. Not always, but sometimes.
The brioche bun's a bit of a giveaway.
Well, okay. Yeah, maybe.
But see, I mean, interestingly, that's what we're trying to encapsulate in these little packets is actually to keep it authentic and to make sure that they are local recipes. Put into a packet so people can actually taste the real flavors. Like for instance, again, the green Thai, it's pretty spicy. And when we mean spicy, it's
spicy.
Nice and hot. And I love it. I actually add a bit more chili to it too. But
And are you finding? Did you find on your travels that young people are still as interested in cooking as ever?
Or
has that changed? All right, good. That's heartening, isn't it?
Yeah. I think. Being fairly young myself, I'm kind of into cooking, although I can't cook. Hence why I, put these together to help people like myself and other people to cook.
Sonny, I was thinking more of children actually. Are children as interested in cooking and being taught by their parents? Did you find that when you were around? So there's a family recipe. Everybody was involved.
Yeah, no, I believe so. I've got two younger nieces, and I have a slightly elder. I have three nieces in total, but I have a couple of young, 9 and 6 they are. They love it. And when we were putting all these sauces together, they were, they're in there chopping various onions and garlic and all sorts.
Get them involved.
They were totally involved. They absolutely loved it. Yeah.
And if you get kids involved at an early age, they're going to keep that interest in food,
yeah.
I think.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. So thank you very much for bringing all these in. Mm-hmm. The last question for me is this thing about cooking. Now, we've spent quite a lot of time with Harry Gotra, who was on a couple of programs ago, who's actually an Indian chef and she's got a cookery school.
Yeah.
Do you think it's really important now that if you're a food producer, you've got to show how to use your product and help people to cook it rather than just, leave it on the shelf and there's a sauce, mate, get on with it sort of thing?
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm glad you brought that up. Like I mentioned, we just don't want to be a cooking sauce. We want to help people get creative make healthy, authentic recipes from home, and that's what we're trying to do, and hence the videos and all that associated around all the sauces and all the different recipes.
And I think more and more people are having an iPad or whatever in the kitchen while they're cooking now as they never used to. People used to look at a recipe book and now they're actually following a how-to on YouTube, and you're following that trend.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the videos and all the different recipes upon our website, they're not there just yet, but they will be. Is going to become synonymous with the brand, definitely.
Okay, so before we have a little piece of music, familysecret.co.uk, that's the place to go.
That's the place, yeah. I mean, we're only available online at the moment, And
but yeah. You're used to selling into big supermarkets, so I'm sure it won't be long.
Let's hope. I mean, watch this space. Yeah, definitely. We'll Jolly be in good. Touch to let you know.
Jolly good. Well, we're going to speak to Philip Owens in a minute after some music. Stay with us because Philip is a food trend, food spotter.
Okay.
So I'm really interested to find out what he thinks the 2017 trends are. Might be something that will be interested in your food development.
No, excellent.
I'm going to pass you over to Paul and his cheesy tunage.
Well, this is a piece of cheesy tunage that I selected especially for Sunny. Oh. And of course, you'll get it straight away.
Of course you did. I know what it is.
Yeah.
We are family.
We are family.
We are family.
Absolutely. Family secret. We are family. Let's have a listen to this.
We are family.
Sly and the Family Stone. Something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're just recovering from eating some amazing food supplied by Sunny, a family secret. Philip, are you on the end of the phone there?
Absolutely.
Hi, Philip. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And you?
Oh, yeah, it's such a shame you're not in the studio today because you just missed out on a whole bunch of amazing food. But anyway, never
mind. Oh, no. What have you had?
So we've had the most amazing keema. In a brioche bun that's an Indian sort of street food. We've had chickpea
curries.
Oh, perfect.
I've just come back from Sri Lanka.
Oh, wow. Well, don't worry. I ate yours and you loved it.
Anyway, Philip, you've got flavorfeed.com, which is a really interesting subscription service, I guess you would say. And it's mostly for
business owners,
restaurants, supermarkets and stuff like that. And what you do is you focus and you go out and search for all the food and flavor trends that you think are in the pipeline. And then
that
allows people like Sunny, who's developing recipes and developing products, I guess, a good insight into what the public are going to be interested in and what the future holds. So have I got that right?
Absolutely. Well, we're passionate about tracking ever-evolving global food trends, and nothing gives us more pleasure than inspiring others, similarly by sharing what we discover as we discover it. And what really makes us different is that we're not a end-of-month report. We're live, so we are constantly updating with our global contributors in real time.
And I presume then you've got to have those contributors around the world, because you've got to pick up stuff that's emerging from America or, you know, from, I don't know, Far East or something, just so that you can
completely
see what's, yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. And again, I presume that your sort of contributors and stuff are people who are in the food business and are knowledgeable about food.
Completely, exactly. And we're also supported by our expert panel. And each member is a specialist in his or her field. And we've got people like James George from Turner & George. We've got game-changing hospitality industry designer Aphrodite Krasser. You probably know her. She did De Shroom and also Heston's Perfectionist Cafe. We've got Professor Charles Spence, Oxford food psychologist, and we've got go-to equipment and serviceware purveyor Paul Goodfellow, and also we've got Mark Meltonville from the Royal Palaces, a food and drink historian.
So you've got a really good mix there, because you need all those different perspectives,
mix,
don't
yeah.
you? It's not just about the food,
yeah.
it's about all sorts of other things. Now, I've been on your website today, and there's sort of a feed, really, that you get, and the content ranges from really sort of short, snappy updates, which I find quite useful. But also you've got
quite
very
in-depth. Much in the Instagram style.
Yeah,
so it's
got
all very visually led and, yeah. and short pieces, as you say.
And then you've got in-depth analysis as well, which is, you know,
yeah.
sometimes you get an in-depth analysis of an ingredient or a retail or something in publishing. So it's
yeah.
quite an eclectic mix, isn't it?
Completely, yeah, completely.
So while you're here, Sunny was quite interested,
yes.
and so was Paul and myself. We're really quite interested in what you think the key trends are. So I had a look at your key trends for 2016. So I'd quite like to see
yeah.
where you think they're going to go for 2017. And interestingly for Sunny, I think, bowl food is something that's come
yes.
up for 2016. Can you just explain bowl food and what you're finding that's beginning to trend in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, bowl foods have been used in my background is the event business, and bowl foods have been used as a way of feeding a lot of people very quickly, and more substantially than canapés, and perhaps when you haven't got a budget for dinner. So it's like a movable buffet, as it were. And so the key things for bowl food is, you know, really sort of in-your-face flavor, really strong flavors, easy to eat, and visually very appealing, and the great thing about them is they lend themselves to global cuisine. So I think you'll find that Marks and Spencer's have launched this week Buddha bowls, which are healthy, quite often sort of grain-based, ancient grains, protein bowls, eclectic, again, sort of global food.
Because the thing is, I have to go to a lot of company events, and I know Paul does. I just as soon as I walk into a room, my heart sinks if there's a buffet, which is
yes.
very, very unimaginative often.
Well,
or
I just don't
worse,
think anything
these
worse
canapés
than...
when you know, I've been sort of on my feet since 7 o'clock going to different meetings, and then somebody presents you with a tiny
piece of wet bread with a prawn on it,
which is about
yeah,
half a centimetre wide.
I mean, there's nothing worse than a buffet when you've got all different cultures and everybody piles it onto the same plate. So
sticky sausages,
think it has to be sort of geographically focused, and you can achieve that with bowl foods as well.
So the bowl food as well. What is that then? So you would have just a small bowl that you could literally have in your hand.
Yeah, I mean, it could be something like, you know, obviously you've seen, you know, how poke has emerged. You know, we spotted it in early 2015.
Can you just explain to our listeners what poke is, just in case they don't know?
Yeah, like me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's similar to ceviche and sashimi. And it's very popular in Los Angeles and now here as well. It's a healthy food option. It's fresh, vibrant ingredients. It's a raw fish salad, basically. So it's chopped, quite chunky, similar to a tartare, but slightly bigger. And it's great in terms of flavor. You can pimp it up with kimchi, wasabi, chili, coriander. So very, very, very healthy, but again, you can sort of mix the ingredients. It's usually sort of salmon or tuna. But there are some vegetable pokés as well. But
so it's almost like you get a steak tartare, but actually with fish. Is that what you're saying? But quite chunky.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Yeah.
Obviously hasn't hit where Paul lives at the moment.
No, it isn't.
But
I'd like it to, because it sounds very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
You also mentioned ancient grains. And again, I think that's been a little bit of a trend for 2016, hasn't it? So we're talking about millet and spelt and kamut and all that sort of stuff, aren't we?
Quinoa, yeah.
Quinoa, yeah. Again, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, ancient grains, they're very healthy, slow-releasing carbs, so it's good that they don't slow you down in the afternoon, so slow burning. And again, they're great flavor vehicles, so you can do different sort of tabbouleh which can be seasonal. You can have, you know, like a winter tabbouleh with raw cauliflower, which is also very much on trend at the moment. Nuts, dried cherries, and then sort of good flavors from like pomegranate syrup or date syrup, to add sweetness.
And is this in your view the sort of demonization of carbs? Is that you know, so people are trying to look at alternatives to have something that's not so carbohydrate heavy?
I think people are looking for things, yeah, definitely, that are not going to slow you down in the work environment. So food that is healthy. It's not going to give you that dip in the afternoon.
And that leads me on to good fats, as I look at Paul Andrews. Good fats.
I'm fat, but I'm not good.
I've been reading quite a lot recently, and we've got, you know, Sunny's lovely sort of Indian sauces here. Now, before that might have been demonised in the fact that, you know, it might have butter in it or ghee or something like that. And,
yeah.
You know, and people talking about eggs and, you know, meat and fish and all that, and somehow you're supposed to have a low fat diet, and yet, you know, this was being advocated by GPs,
governments
for literally decades,
yeah.
And yet consistently people are getting fatter and fatter. I mean, you can't deny that.
Yeah.
And now there's this thing about good fats, which is almost a 180 degree U-turn. What are you finding? Are people reacting to that? Are they you know, agreeing with it? Are they thinking, God, I can't even listen to anything from the government anymore, because how do you know what's true and what's not? What's your feelings?
I mean, for years, sort of doctors and nutritionists have said that sort of a low-fat diet is the key to losing weight and preventing health problems. But as we know, that not all fat is the same. You know, there's bad fats that increase sort of risks of certain diseases, and there's good fats that protect your brain and heart. You know, like the healthy fats, omega-3s, they're important for your physical and emotional health.
And Sunny, there is quite a tradition in India, isn't there, of having a balanced, making sure that what you eat is balanced, both in
yes.
terms of what you eat. So I'm just going to ask
yeah.
Sunny.
I mean, your body needs fat.
Yeah.
You know, healthy or good fats are essential, you know, to help you manage moods and stay on top of your mental game and fight fatigue.
Philip, I'm just gonna ask Sunny here. It's difficult for you because you can't see. So Sunny, there is an Indian tradition, isn't there, that you've got to get this balance right somehow.
I mean, I think everyone, you know, in any diet there needs to be you know, balance. But you know, a lot of you know, Indian food is incorporated with like chapati and rice. You know, but then equally, you know, with lentils or you know, some type of protein. So, you know, there's the balance, you know, just there.
But also the flavour balance, I think, is important as well in Indian cooking. So you often get this sweet, but then you get sour, and then you get salty, and then you get it. And I'm finding a lot with your sauces here.
Yeah.
But that's what makes them so fragrant, is that you've got that balance, really.
Yeah, no, yeah, definitely. It's, you know, it's just finding the right balance with, you know, with the chilli and, you know, you know, the sweetnesses of, you know, the coconut milks within the Thai sauces, etc. Mm. So, yeah.
And Philip, can I talk to you about broth?
Yes.
We've been. I have the pleasure of going to all these exhibitions with Paul, and we talk to a lot of producers. So we tend to see what new products are coming through. The last exhibition I went to, I think there were three people that were selling, you know, bone broth proper.
Yeah.
Oh, it tasted absolutely delicious, both chicken and beef.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Is that a new trend? I mean, because it's low in.
I think
good for you.
Yeah, we spotted that, a few years ago now. And there's a bit of controversy around it because people say, you know, bone broth, you know, all it is really is it's just stock, and we've had stock for years. But the difference is with the bone broth is that it's actually simmered for a really long time, like 24 hours. Mm. And you add a little bit of cider vinegar to the broth to draw out the nutrients. You get that really intense flavour, and it's very healthy.
I mean,
well,
you really can tell. And yeah. I think when I go to places like Pho or even actually Pret now, you know, instead of having miso
have,
soup,
yeah,
or starting
a while to filter through.
But instead of miso soup at Pret now, you can actually get bone broth. I mean, that's incredible. It must be mainstream if you're doing it, with somebody that sells sandwiches.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to kind of add something there, a lot of Indian cooking, well, Asian cooking for like years, we actually, like, for instance, like a chicken curry, like, we'll cook with, meat on the bone. So like, your drumsticks and your thighs, we'll remove the skin. We'll add our sauce to it, etc., and we'll just allow it to boil for like a good hour and a half sometimes, and that's where some of the a lot of the flavor comes from is the actual bone. So it's been going on for Asian cooking for quite some time.
Yeah,
I think when you look at this and the fact that the government have completely blown their credit, all governments, not just ours, the American government, everybody have blown their credibility on nutrition because they've just been wrong about everything so far. I think people now are just going for foods that are healthy, wholesome, balanced and nutritional from a filling you up point of view. And if it's fats or carbohydrates or whatever, who cares? As long as it's not too much and you balance it.
But I do think the advice is if your parents or your grandparents wouldn't recognise it, don't have it.
Yeah.
Because, if you're eating fresh, good food and clean food, then your grandparents would recognise that. If it's fish or it's meat or it's... they'll recognise it, won't they? So it'll be fine.
If I went for what my dad had eaten, I'd starve.
Fine, but
I think the real problem is, though, is that, we're just not moving enough.
That's the problem.
Simple, really, yeah.
So broth is here to stay, do we think, Philip? Certainly in
2017? Yeah, I think it is. And I think also, the future is functional food. I think there's a move towards foods that are known to have accepted health benefits, not just some of the, we get a lot of things that are touted as superfoods without actually any scientific evidence based around it. Yeah. But I think now people are buying into the idea that food is medicine, that by eating functional foods, they can really influence their health.
And we had we had Craig Sams on the show a couple of weeks ago, who's the co-founder of Green and Blacks. And obviously he's been doing stuff since the 1960s. I mean, he's seen everything, I think, and really did pioneer, this sort of healthy cooking. I mean, one of the things he was saying to me is that it's going to be all about the gut for the next couple of years. It's about what is healthy, what upsets the balance in your stomach, and that's really what people are going to focus
alkaline,
on.
Alkaline,
and I think for you, as you describe it, food as medicine, naturally as medicine, is going to be around for a little while, isn't it?
It is, and I think people, we're already seeing how people are matching DNA to food. So your particular DNA, they can find foods that are particularly good for you.
Really?
I think we're definitely going to see more of that. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of work around that. Yeah, I think that's interesting because, some people say, I've been on a low-fat diet, I haven't lost anything. Somebody else can, and they have, but mainly, I presume, that's because it just really suits them, their body makeup. There isn't one size fits all, is there, if you're trying to eat healthily?
No, completely.
Interesting. Another thing that I was quite interested in, and we're seeing a lot of the resurgence of gin, particularly, but also we've been talking to the guys who've been making milk vodka, which is really good fun, and some of the artisan beers. One of the things you're spotting is this move towards alcohol-free and mocktails and things like that. Do you think that's temporary, or do you think there's a large section of society now that just aren't growing up drinking and therefore are looking for good alternatives?
Definitely, there's a larger demand for it and a large section of society that are looking for that. So it's something that's just going to gather momentum.
And is that sort of mocktails where people are getting alternatives, or are people trying to make spirits like gin or vodka or beer without alcohol that still tastes good.
Yeah, there are sort of various new spirits on the market without, they're not spirits because they don't contain alcohol, but they're alcohol free. Yeah, definitely.
So they're trying to mimic those, because I mean, the problem I've got is they don't taste as nice. That's my
I think people are just fed up of just having like a cranberry juice or some elderflower cordial. They want something a bit more innovative.
Grown up as well, something a bit grown up.
Yes, exactly.
Have you spotted anything that you're impressed by in that field? Because to be honest, we haven't really particularly.
I can't think of anything to hand actually at the moment. But I mean, I've seen some interesting some interesting mocktails, and I think with the juicing as well. I mean, using spices like turmeric and carrots and ginger, I think that works very well.
Well, you're getting a bit of a buzz from that sort of spice.
Yes.
I noticed on your website talking about seed lip. Do you know a little bit about that?
Yes, that's the alcohol-free spirit, isn't it?
Yeah, is that the way you think it might go, where people are going to... Because we're getting people who are trying to do the sort of meatless burger so that the burgers even, you know, have got even, you know, looks like blood or juice coming out of it.
Like the one at the Momofuku,
I can see that crossing over into the sort of the alcohol area where people are really going to try and mimic alcohol in as much as they can as possible, but it be alcohol-free.
It's interesting. This is my field because I'm teetotal, and therefore I don't drink alcohol, and I have a particular issue with this. I'm not remotely interested in alcohol-free beer or alcohol-free wine. I can.
But somebody like me who drinks a lot.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Within the government guidelines, I hasten to add, but I do like drinking. Wine.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It isn't for us that don't drink alcohol. It's for you alcohol imbibers when you can't get your fix.
I'm not saying
of all the alcohol.
I'm not saying it's for
it?
You. But what I'm saying is, I think there's a real interest in people saying, "I do like drinking wine. I do, but I don't want to drink as much alcohol."
Yeah.
And successively over years, alcohol has got stronger and stronger in terms of wine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although why, I don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's quite difficult to find something that's not very heavy in alcohol and still tastes nice if you like drinking alcohol, I would say.
The interesting thing, especially on a discussion on seed lip and things like that, on alcohol-free spirits, if that's not an oxymoron, it's interesting. When I go into a pub, which I do very often, I tend to drink soda water and lime. And there's no way you can tell that hasn't got vodka or gin in it. You just can't tell, yeah? And to be honest, it tastes fairly similar anyway.
I disagree with you there, because the vodka's is now... When you used to drink, Paul, things that used to taste of nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm sure Philip will back me up now. The proliferation of botanicals in a gin or a vodka is huge.
Yeah, no, but but that's exactly what I'm saying. For me, that doesn't want the taste of alcohol in it, it's fine. It's only you lot that want alcohol, that want it to taste like something you're not drinking.
Philip, defend me here somewhere, please.
Yeah, well, it's like you mentioned the veggie burger that bleeds, but if you're a vegetarian, surely the last thing you want is a vegetarian burger that bleeds.
Exactly.
But I do think a lot of people want to cut down on meat, and actually from an environmental point of view, a lot of people are saying we can't keep having the number of cows we've got, you know.
Yeah.
So I think there's that aspect.
Different argument, though, isn't it?
I'm going to move on to something else less contentious. Again, I noticed on your website that in the sort of the 2015 sort of reports that you had, is that you were saying that Chicken Kiev was on the way back and all that 1970s sort of prawn cocktail and stuff, you know, the sort of range of 1970s foods.
With a pretentious little blue nun along it.
Yeah.
Well, it has come back.
Where's that now?
There's a restaurant in Exmouth Market. That does some 70s food and Chicken Kiev. And I mean, it has never really gone out of fashion. And I think really with the whole Brexit thing, there's certainly been a nod to nostalgia. People are looking for a bit more comfort around the sort of foods. And we've seen, you know, the reintroduction of dessert trolleys and a bit of table theatre with crepe Suzettes and just sort of things that make them feel, you know, a bit more that sort of nostalgic nod.
As long as you don't have to wear those clothes, I'll be fine. Hot pants.
Your loons. I'll have the prawn cocktail, the steak and a Black Forest gâteau, please.
And I remember my auntie going to a wedding wearing hot pants as if that was okay, because it was in the 1970s and dreadful
stuff. But is the prawn cocktail ever going to go out of fashion?
No.
I don't think
None of those will if they're all done properly, of course.
No.
But
no.
Okay, and then finally I was quite interested, again, from Sonny's point of view, because he's got these lovely sauces here. Food and drink subscriptions are quite interesting. So we get people who are subscribing to, let's say, the London Tea Club, you know, or the Chocolate Club. And I, you know, if you look at these sources here, it, you know, it's not just about the sort of veg boxes anymore, is it? Can you give us a bit more information on sort of food and drink subscriptions?
Food and subscriptions? How do you mean, sorry?
So people subscribing to different sorts of, you know, food and having them delivered. So you get like a month's worth
of
tea. Oh,
right. Okay, like your vegetable boxes.
But it seems to have changed into different areas now. And I was quite interested from Sunny's perspective. That, you know, that you could subscribe to, let's say, family secret sources, and then you would get, you know, six of those a month, and it encourages you then, doesn't it, to use them in different ways.
A bit like the vegetable box as well. I mean, you never know what you're going to get. You're just going to get something that, you know, that's in season and organic, and it sort of inspires you to be creative with that last turnip.
Yes, and do you think that is going to move into things like chocolate and tea and, you know, other sorts of areas? Because it's always been renowned for being vegetables, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And I think definitely people are definitely shopping more online. I mean, even Amazon has started delivering food online. So, yes, it is something that's going to develop.
And I was just going to say, Amazon Dash, of course, is an extension of that club type approach to things, isn't it?
Yes.
Where you reorder the same thing over and over again. Yeah.
Sonny, would you consider these sort of different methods? Because buying online is really difficult. You need to get on Ocado, don't you, or something really. Mm. But even if you get on Ocado, it's got thousands and thousands and thousands, and actually it's quite hard for somebody to then find your product.
Yeah.
Different routes of market are definitely worth considering, aren't they?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know, anything that gives a brand, you know, exposure is always definitely a good thing, I say. Mm. Yeah, and the subscription thing, you know, is a fantastic idea. It's tried, tested, and many companies have been successful, you know, with, you know, going down that route.
So, Philip, finally for me, the restaurant world, anything that you're picking up there in terms of the sort of themes, restaurants that are coming? I mean, in London, really, any from any country in the world, can't you? But is there anything that you're seeing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're seeing that towards the end of last year and the beginning of this year, a rise in authentic Mexican with El Pastor that's just opened at Borough Market, from the Barrafina Boys, which is fantastic tacos, and Temper, Neil Rankin's Temple to Barbecue in Broadwick Street. Mm-hmm. And Bredas Tacos have gone from street food to a fixed venue. So definitely more on Mexican. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see more on Filipino. You know, with poke, we're definitely seeing more there. And I think what we're also going to see is African as well coming through.
Okay.
There's a chef, a rising star called Lope Ario. She recently won a competition by a publisher, and she's introducing Nigerian food to the UK, and she's got a new book coming out in June. So she's definitely one to watch.
Well, we had some of our folks from here in Ghana recently.
And yes.
And they were really taken with the fish head soup, I don't think.
No. I think there's a difference between...
Well, there was a pop-up at Brixton, actually. Zoe Garner's Kitchen at Brixton.
Right, okay.
So I think an unknown cuisine.
So can you just describe to me Filipino food? Because I eat out quite a lot, but Filipino food is completely alien to me.
What is it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a mixture, really. It's a little bit of Chinese, Hawaiian. Okay. So it's actually a melting pot of cuisines, and of which, you know, sort of poke is one. We've seen musabi, which is a traditional Japanese rice and nori snack, which is popular in Hawaii. They top it with spam, of all things there, but chefs are now elevating it with more interesting ingredients. And there's a place in San Francisco that's doing that. So I think on the back of poke, you're going to see more things like musabi.
And I'd be very keen to see African food emerging as well. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So going back to Flavor Feed, so we've got flavorfeed.com. And if you're a business and you're either a restaurant or you're a food manufacturer, going onto your site and subscribing to your services is really worthwhile if you want to stay ahead of the game, stay ahead of the competition.
Completely.
In terms of development. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Mm.
And what
we have one aim, and that's to inform and inspire you.
So what is it that you get if you subscribe exactly, Philip?
Well, you get access to a multi-device content. It is a customizable, searchable platform that allows you to innovate smarter.
So it's literally, it's all the research that you found, all the trends that you found, you know, collated, like a library, I'm guessing. It's a very live, living library that people are, you know, the experts are chucking into this library, and it allows you access to that.
It's very user-friendly as well. Yeah. You can save searches, you can build up a portfolio of feeds, you know, for presentations. So it's all very user-friendly.
Okay, so if anybody's interested in that, they need to go on to flavorfeed.com. That's all really, really, really interesting. Thank you very much, Philip.
That was really fascinating. Thank you.
Yeah, it's probably something we probably need to have you on every sort of 5 or 6 months or something and see what the next trends that you're seeing.
So, absolutely.
I'm guessing quite a lot are coming over from America that you're seeing as well.
And I'm glad I'm on trend with spam and
1970s chicken Kiev.
Kiev. I'm there. I'm right there. I'm leading edge. Me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Philip. And just one final piece of advice. Any advice for Sonny and his lovely sort of Asian sources that he's got? Anything? Any trends that you think he should be hooking himself onto?
Well, there's something that we've actually published today that Sonny's probably familiar with, which is drumstick, it's a fruit, and it's otherwise known as moringa, and it's native to north of America. And I saw it when I was in Sri Lanka recently, then it makes a wonderful curry. Hoppers in London, they make a lentil and vegetable stew. Mm-hmm. It has great depth of flavour. It's a great flavour vehicle. But it's also good in drinks.
What's it called, Philip?
It's called drumstick.
As in chicken
fruit.
Drumsticks?
Yes.
So a drumstick fruit.
Yeah, and you can you use it. It looks a little bit like okra, but you can use it in soups and curries. And the leaves are often cooked and eaten like spinach or used in the salad.
I will have to go in search for that.
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you very much.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Philip. That's great. Thank you for joining us.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Phil. Cheers now.
Bye.
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 That was fascinating, wasn't it? Mm. Fascinating. So you got to go out now, Sonny, and go and find some drumstick, whatever that is. Or I don't even know what it looks like.
The first thing I'm going to do.
Yeah, brilliant. So we did have a little interview with Adrian Boswell from Selfridges, but I'm sorry we don't have time for that today. So we'll play Adrian next week, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's really useful. And again, Adrian's a great person to get to know because he is the fresh food buyer at Selfridges. Mm. And again, we met him at the Bread and Butter Conference. Mm. And he gave us some really invaluable advice if you're a producer, what they're looking for, what you've got to have if you want to get into somewhere like Selfridges. Mm. So apologies to Adrian. We'll do that next week.
Absolutely. Mm. It's been a fascinating programme today. Funnily enough, listening to Phil talk about healthy foods and food as medicine, I happen to be reading a scientific report where a group of scientists have actually analysed the data about what caused this mess over bad fat. Mm. And it turned out that nobody really paid very much attention to the original study. It was more political. You know, it was a pressure group. People started saying you mustn't do it. And nobody really peer checked what they'd done. And when they went back and checked, it was basically nonsense. They just haven't done it properly.
But I think the thing is, it's intuitive. So it feels right. If something's fatty, it will make you fat. And there's a natural human assumption going on.
But of course, everything, apart from water probably, everything will make you fat if you consume it in too many quantities and you don't move around very much.
That's right.
It's whether it's healthy for you or not is the main issue, isn't it? And that's what's caught them out so badly with this particular issue. But interesting, I just love the fact that spam's in vogue. I'm made up by that.
See, I grew up in the 60s in London. Yeah. So in the sort of early 70s, I was sort of coming into being a teenager. And the food was absolutely dreadful.
It was pants.
When I look back, it was appalling.
It's
probably the worst period in UK
the
history
ultimate
for
food. The ultimate food was those bendy frankfurters you got in Wimpy, where they actually cut them so they went in a circle. Do you remember those?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the things we used to have, Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
Do you remember those?
Yeah, Kellogg's. Yeah, I do.
full of jam or something you put in the toast. I mean, how bad were they for you?
I was in a supermarket the other day, and it was a supermarket that had shelves for like Polish food and stuff like that, and they had American food, and they had Twinkies and Pop-Tarts.
Pop-Tarts. I thought they'd...
Twinkies and Pop-Tarts. Yeah. Now, that's healthy.
Yeah. but you can't believe that in somebody's lifetime, because I don't consider myself to be that old, that food now is so different. And certainly the food we're seeing is phenomenal in terms of the range, the ingredients. You can just go and get... I mean, for us to sit on a programme today and somebody say a fruit or a vegetable that we don't know is very, very unusual, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because we just have access to almost everything.
You have access to the globe, and it's part of the benefits of globalisation is that you can find and source things from all over the place. Also, people don't realise you see lots of stuff floating around on news outlets about how bad everything is. In fact, everything isn't bad at all. Everything is actually pretty good, really, compared to previous generations in the past.
It's got to make the right choices, though. I think that's the thing. And make sure there's a balance.
Yeah, but one of the things is the abundance of food that we have. Because I also remember in the 60s and 70s watching harrowing films of millions of people dropping dead in Africa through not eating.
Starvation, yeah.
And that doesn't. It still happens occasionally. But that's normally man-made now. It's in the middle of a civil war or something. It's not just a complete lack of food any longer.
I'm not sure I totally agree with that. But anyway.
But it isn't. When was the last famine that you anywhere in the world? When did you last hear of a famine?
I don't know. Maybe it's not newsworthy enough anymore. But I think the thing for me is that there's two things that happens. First of all, we have now what is called an obesogenic environment. Mm. So you've only got to sit at a supermarket and they put all the sweets where kids can reach them because they're sitting in a shopping trolley.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything's everywhere. Yeah. I mean, you can't walk anywhere hardly without some food being in front of you, which makes it very difficult to resist. Mm-hmm. So that's very hard. And then I think going out to eat in a fast food joint, like Wimpy's or whatever when we were kids, was a massive treat because it was really, really expensive.
And therefore, people
couldn't afford to do it. And I think what happened about 20, 30 years ago is that the fast food joints suddenly decided to make what they did as cheap as possible. Mm-hmm. And the fact is now you can get, fast food cheaper than you can, in inverted commas, normal food.
Yep, absolutely.
And therefore, the move down market on takeaway food has been disastrous, I think. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I think there is a shift away from that. There are many more, kind of innovative producers now making fast food, healthier and better. And I think, there will be a massive shift towards that.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
I hope so, because now being fat and not getting enough exercise is a sign of being poor and not a sign of being rich.
Exactly.
And that is insane, isn't it? I mean, that's totally insane.
It's just turned on its head.
Yeah. Because, bad food is cheap food now very often. So it'll be very interesting. So we must get Philip back and see what else he's spotting.
It was fascinating. And I hadn't heard of poke before.
I hadn't either.
And I'm eager to try that because it sounds really interesting. Mm. I agree with you as well about African food. Mm. I'd like to find, apart from Malpani worms, I've had enough of those.
Okay. We won't go there.
Yeah. I was forced to eat barbecued Malpani worms in Zimbabwe and Botswana. But again, it's a completely different cuisine, completely different. And I think that kind of thing...
The flavours are different.
Funny enough, I can't remember what it was called, sadly enough. About 8 or 9 years ago, I was on the Isle of Wight, would you believe, and there was an African restaurant in Shanklin. I've no idea why there was. And I ate there one night, and it was fantastic, and I ended up eating there 3 or 4 times. Yeah.
Yeah. So we must look out for that. Mm-hmm. So thanks again to Philip Owens from Flavour Feed, and that's flavourfeed.com if you're interested or you need that sort of information in your food business. And it was great to have Sunny Madar here. Thank you so much. We really enjoyed you being here.
Thank you.
Look
very
how
much
content
for
he is sitting over there after eating all those curries.
I'll put on half a stone again. I've done it again. Yeah.
The keema street food for you is a real revelation, wasn't it, Paul?
I ate 3 things and I loved all 3 of the things.
Mm. Thank you.
The Indonesian chicken was wonderful, and I would certainly eat that anytime. I'd intravenously have the chickpea curry because I just love chickpeas.
Yeah,
but I tell you what, the street food, the keema, unbelievably good.
That is great, isn't it?
I don't mind going and having finger food places. I don't mind things like burgers and hot dogs and what have you. but wow, wouldn't that be different to go somewhere and just not have a sausage in a bun, but have, you know.
It's a step above. And of course with keema, it's better if you make it and then leave it. You can leave it on the cooker and then make sure it's hot, obviously, next time you have it, and it tastes even better.
It doesn't, like any, I mean, any curry always tastes better the next day because, like, you know, all the flavours infused into the meat and the vegetables. It's like, you know, it's much better the next day.
Absolutely. So thanks again, Sunny. And if you're interested in getting those sauces yourself, you need to go on to familysecret.co.uk. And that's another programme. A great I love it when we've got a bit of food, a bit of, you know, technology.
It's why I do this programme. So I eat. Otherwise, I wouldn't eat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but no, it was great. And it was really good to meet you, Sunny, and to sample your fabulous sauces.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely gorgeous. And all power to you with that.
It's been a pleasure. Brilliant.
And we'll be back next week with Adrian Boswell from Selfridges.
Absolutely. Have a fabulous week. And we'll be back, as we say, next week with another food talk show.